when we design anything, we should always be designing with the most at risk at center. Imagine how proud we would be as citizens to be from a city that genuinely looked after everybody. If just one of them existed, the rest would fall in line.
The age of the individual has betrayed us. It is killing us from within by eliminating the most important thing outside of our bodies to our health and our wellness, our relationships. This is the Second Transition Podcast. I'm Phil Loring. Our relationships, our caring, compassionate, and reciprocal relationships with other humans and with the rest of the natural world are what make it possible to be truly human, to achieve the fullness of what we are capable of as a species on this planet, in our communities, and our families. Yet the age of the individual, the age of extractive capitalism, functions specifically by breaking these relationships apart. How do we put them back together? How do we rebuild compassionate and caring communities that thrive together? Today, I am speaking with chef, social entrepreneur, and radio and podcasting personality, Mark Brand. Mark is a forward thinker on how we transform our cities through care and compassion. We talk about tackling big problems and designing our world to create safety for all. Let's dig in. Today, I am just thrilled to be joined by Mark Brand. Mark is a pioneering chef and entrepreneur in the fields of social impact and community development. He leads a number of amazing organizations, not the least of which is his A Better Life Foundation. And he's also celebrating the upcoming launch of Better, a podcast and radio show designed to empower and guide us into activating our purpose so we can all build better lives together. Mark, thanks a ton for being here.
Absolute pleasure, Philip. Thank you for having me.
Mark, everything you do, and first, thank you for everything you do, from your work as a chef to your speaking engagements, seem to me to be oriented first and foremost around empathy. So you, in your work, you've dedicated yourself to some serious issues, what some people might call wicked problems, hunger, homelessness, but you target these contributions at a very personal level, a very individual level. Can maybe we start this conversation by talking about this approach, your theory of change, if you will. Why do you focus so much on individuals?
Yeah, for sure. And I'll take a couple of steps back to go forward. And the first one is I'm coming to you today from the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Snohomish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Squamish nations, where my work that you're discussing predominantly happens, or Vancouver, BC, as it's known by its colonial title. And when we say me, we say we. And so I get to be the very honored servant leader and tip of the spear to my organizations. And I have team members predominantly with lived experience, most of whom have faced significant barriers to employment prior, who make up the energy that we're discussing today. And so anytime that we're talking about the work, we're talking about them.
What a lovely introduction, Mark.
And so when I talk about individualism and like why it's important after saying the we or the us, is that we've tried a lot of things. It's 2022. Homelessness is steadily on the rise. The wealth gap is steadily increasing. Poverty, hunger, domestically in first world, very proud first world countries, is rampant and horrifying ground level. And we're doing next to nothing about it. Next to nothing. And I can say that with certainty, not because I've read a few news articles, but because I've researched, studied it, and been ground level for almost 10 years. And not just in Vancouver, but I worked in the Mission Tenderloin for a year. I've done a lot of time in Skid Row. I've worked in New York for 3.5 years. And so I've seen this stuff firsthand and met with the people firsthand. And the causality is greed. It's capitalism. And that's just, it's a very easy thing to just say, the way the systems are built are not built for anybody else to succeed aside from the apex predator of money. And so if we focus with what resource we do have as a community, we have an opportunity to make impactful change.
When I think about a place like Vancouver, or, you know, I live just outside the Greater Toronto Area. Also, you know, the two the most prohibitively expensive places to live in Canada, you know, places that are beautiful, that have this rich history and culture, but on the other hand, are so corrupted by this economic imbalance, these values that make it so that so many just have to, you know, sort of exist in this gap of isolation and hardship and marginalization, and then also be stigmatized for it.
Exactly.
That's overwhelming. But when I hear you talk, when I hear you talk about the work you do, you seem to take it all in and sort of refract it back into optimism and turn it into opportunity. How do you do that?
By doing it. And I say that in all seriousness. I think adjacent to this work is the mental health crisis. And when I say adjacent to it, I mean the Venn diagram of those who are acting and those who are not acting crosses over in mental health. And our apathy versus empathy creates great emotional trauma in us, whether we're aware of it or we're compartmentalizing it or we're using one of a million addictions from online shopping to alcohol or narcotics. Those things are all related. And the line that I say pretty much as a prayer to myself is, if the community is unwell, we're all unwell. Period. It's not up for negotiation. It's scientifically proven. The energy is there. Our inability to own and understand that when we see people close to us, and I mean in proximity, also loved ones, but in proximity, who are in dire need, who are in triage, and we do nothing about it, it hurts us. And to not engage in some way continues to build up.
How exactly?
So the analogy I use, I work in New York City, as I mentioned a lot. When I speak about this there, I say, you know, you may very well be on your way to work after a good night's rest. And you walk to the subway station and you're going to see somebody unhoused. Not maybe, you will. Then you get on the subway and you probably experience somebody else. Then you get off and you might see an unhoused family begging, literally, to be fed or helped. By the time you get to the office, you have AirPodded that away. You've Spotify playlisted that away. You have done what you can to block yourself from it. But we're picking it all up and we're taking it all in. And so you have this level of frustration. You may be short of temper. You may feel sad. You'd be like, why is this depression here? And it's right, literally right in front of us, that we know that we have more than enough wealth. We have 10 times more abundance on this planet than we need. And yet we choose this. Well, poverty is an act of violence. It's a complicit act of violence, and we're complicit in it. And so if you're acting, you can be optimistic because you also see others acting. When you surround yourself with people who are in it and doing the work, even though we're getting inches in a game of billions of miles, that's what this life has got to be about.
You know, that people often say to me, you know, sometimes incremental change is too slow. And I always respond by saying, you know, in my experience, incremental change is slow until all of a sudden it's not.
Yes.
Now, Mark, I'm also really curious because not only are you really active in making change, you're also really good at getting other people involved.
So I like to think of us as like Santa's workshop, but for advocates. So people come in and we're like, okay, cool. Well, let's give you some language. Let's give you some vernacular. Let's give you some experience working with people who have had some challenges, and let's see how your being changes. And, you know, in a great many of those cases, we find ourselves with another ally, another accomplice, another advocate. And so that's why I care greatly about it, because I believe people have to touch and see the work safely without being accused. I want to be really clear in anything that I'm saying today, there is no shame or blame in any of it. The system simply is. It's a series of systems that have been created. I don't think there's a big curtain to pull back with lizard people behind it. There's not. I know there's not. It's just a series of things that have happened in the last 400 years that have gotten us into this particular space.
That evokes for me in what you were just talking about, a threshold, you know, or a tipping point. And I'm curious, you know, when people look away, when people look at these problems as being too big to solve, but you work with people to create opportunities and to engage people and to see how they can see themselves in solutions. Mm-hmm. Have you encountered some sort of threshold where, you know, what it takes to help people go from seeing a problem as being too big to solve to being something that they can really engage with?
No and yes. So I'll explain both answers. It's such an individual thing, right? Some people will walk into our diner on 43 West Hastings Street and immediately be called to the cause. They're like, I'm going to get a camera and teach myself how to shoot photos and document this stuff, or just get, you know, really excited about it. And other people I've worked with who are part of corporate or wherever that may be, 9 years, 10 years until a light bulb really goes on. And that's okay too.
You've spent a lot of time experiencing these different big problems we've been talking about from multiple different angles, thinking about the problems, thinking about the solutions. I'm curious to hear what maybe you think people misunderstand most about a problem like homelessness and how people find themselves unhoused.
Yeah, there's a couple big ones. And I really appreciate the prompt. And, you know, the biggest one that nobody likes to say, they really don't like to say it. This is where I got in trouble early in my career and continue to get in trouble. And I'm okay with it. It's good trouble. Is the get a job energy. Why don't they just get a job? That sort of analogy. And, you know, it's more rampant than you think. Right. And they're that real, like, I had to work really hard, therefore you should. And not understanding a set of circumstances or painting our own trauma or bias onto other people while simultaneously being triggered by them because of the inability or inaction to help them is that whole mess. Whew. I mean, that's it goes from snap judgment to that's easier for me to shut it down, right? Mm-hmm. And I created this thing in 2013. It's called the Token Project. The language sucks, but you know, the project itself was, I realized how many people in my neighborhood were just walking by folks on the street and just not engaging. Not even a sorry, you know, when that sorry sucks too. But if somebody's sitting in there, they're genuinely in need. And so I started asking people, and this will bring it back to the things we don't like to say, right? And it's like, why don't you give money? Because I personally give money and I'm comfortable with it. And what people do with it is their business. And that's my choice. People don't give money because they're in fear that people are going to use it for drugs or alcohol.
Right.
Now, that's a control issue. It's further marginalizes people, but it's the design problem.
The design problem. Mark, what do you mean by that?
So if you're not designing for what's actually happening and you're instead imposing what should be correct, then how do we get anywhere? And so I created this thing, and you buy them at my diner, little gift certificates or plastic coin that fit in your pocket. And if somebody says, I'm hungry, you hand them one. It has my logo on it. They know where to go. They come to us already. So they can redeem for a sandwich, 1 of 5 sandwiches, vegan and gluten-free options available. And I launched it. And I thought maybe we'd do 2 or 3 a day, you know, and that would be 2 or 3 conversations with people who aren't being spoken to. The first day we did over 120, and we've done 167,000 plus redemptions since. That has created 320,000 conversations.
Wow.
That's a lot of people talking to a lot of people who are going through a lot of experience. Those people will never again go get a job, and they may have made a friend, and the next time they might give money, and the next time they might help somebody navigate their way back. And so, you know, I think the tropes that are all there, we can start to break them down by creating ways for people to interact in a safe manner for them to get started, dip their toes in the pool, right? And as a radical activist on the other side, I'm like, and upend the patriarchy, destroy the capitalism, and raise the welfare rates and house everybody.
Right.
But in the interim, while we're doing that work, it'd be real cool for people to talk to each other who are desperately lonely and hungry.
It's a really great example of how much you can do when you think about the change being something that you are a part of, that is a community thing, as opposed to, you know, waiting for the policy, waiting for all of the policymakers to come around to create that new bill. Sort of change from within. Don't wait anymore. Let's just do it. I have a couple more questions for you. We've talked so much about cities, and so many people in an academic sense look at cities as being the future, that they can be more sustainable. They build up, not out. They have mass transit, that these cities can be ways that we thrive ecologically as well as socially. But now, right now, we're talking through all of these problems that really run through the core of our cities, that make them also spaces, as I said earlier, of exclusion and marginalization. What future do you see, or do you hope to see, for cities?
I love both the utopian and dystopian discussions here, right? Are we in Blade Runner?
Yeah.
Right? Are we? Is that where we end up? Yeah, some cities will. Some will, for sure. Some are almost there. And so when we design anything, we should always be designing with the most at risk at center. Because if you go out from there, everything's going to be beautiful. And allow me to share.
Yeah, please.
If we look at the amount of people who are actually unhoused, critically unhoused, who are unsafe, it costs us as municipalities, and this is data, this isn't, you know, a hypothesis, this has been proven in multiple cities, 3 to 5 times more as taxpayers to keep somebody unhoused and deal with medical emergencies, et cetera, than it would to house them and give them wraparound services. Period. Not negotiable, not maybe, not what if. So we're already spending our money, our taxpayer money. We're choosing this. If we just started base, the very base, we are going to create supportive communities for people who have challenges, people who have barriers, people who have mental health issues. 1 in 4, 1 in 3, really. Let's be honest. All of us are adjacent to it or suffer. I have multiple diagnoses that I manage. But for my privilege, I'm not in the situation like many people I serve. And so imagine how proud we would be as citizens to be from a city that genuinely looked after everybody. If just one of them existed, the rest would fall in line. Because boy, we're competitive. We don't want to be the city that doesn't do it. Nobody wants to be that mayor. So the way that changes, of course, and when you said earlier, like, it goes really slow till it goes fast, that's also why I'm optimistic. Because I've sat in those rooms multiple times. And I'm like, we're so close. We're so close to the critical talking heads actually realizing they'll get reelected for this. And I don't care why they do it, just that they do it.
So you've seen and worked in a lot of cities. What's a city that gets you excited?
Mexico City is my favorite example to use, because the negative narratives around Mexico City are so disgusting. And it's one of the most incredibly green, bountiful, beautiful, spiritual cities in the world. And it's a third of the size of our country, you know, and you see some people unhoused, but very few in comparison. And when you go to other places and you see the community looking after itself, you're like, wow, we should aspire to this instead of begrudging it. And so, of course, there's other offsets and issues, huge pollution, huge trash problems. These things are all solvable. I think we know if, as a government, we wanted to, we could keep everybody safe, fed, housed, living in happiness. And those things need to be the design principle behind what works and what doesn't.
Mark, I'm really appreciative of this conversation. And I have one last question that I think probably really builds on the last one. And it's something I ask everybody. And that's about, what would you like to see in your lifetime, a radical change that you would like to see unfold? And how close do you think we are?
I feel like the genie just popped out of the bottle and I'm on the spot. and I've only got one wish, you know? And you know why I have that energy? Because what we say matters and happens. And I think that's positive and negative. We say a lot of negative things to ourselves and about others and about the world we live in. And if you don't believe in manifestation, I ask you to think about it. And I ask you to say really nice things to yourself before I answer this question. Really nice things to yourself and to others, because it matters a tremendous deal. And so that sort of dovetails into what I would hope to see, which is safety for everybody. Just safety. The vast majority of the population of this planet doesn't want Kardashian level wealth or fame. They don't. They just want food for their family. They want to be able to live in peace. They want to watch their kids grow. They want to foster community. They want to be great elders. They want to be wise, patient, soft. They want to do all of the things. They want to caretake the planet in respectful and meaningful ways. And we've gotten lost in this chase of things that don't exist. Mm-hmm. We are built to have a much simpler and much more deeply loving and connected life. I was just in Mexico City. I work there a lot. I love it. And I was about an hour outside working with an organization called Techo. And Techo works in 19 countries, focusing on families and housing and running water and basic necessities. As soon as I arrived, of course, you're trained to think that you're coming in and you bring value, and that value could come in service or in money. And every time I walk into one of these situations, I leave with 1,000 times more than I've ever brought. And that is the true hope and optimism that I get to walk in life with. People who have so little have so much. And there's just that little is a concept. Let me say that it's not my judgment of what people have. It is a concept. And so hanging out with the kids and the moms and the dads and the grandmas, we cooked for about 5-6 hours together and ate and hung out, and laughter was everywhere. And then they toured me the school that they'd set up. The school is obviously not staffed by traditional teachers. It's staffed by the moms and dads and people of the community. And I was like, what's the curriculum like? What are you guys teaching? And one of the first classes they teach is around emotional intelligence and how to deal with your feelings. And I was like, I was at the D school for a year and they didn't teach me this. I taught at USC and did pop-ups at Stanford. We don't teach that. But we should. It should be the first thing we teach. And yet, with communal running water and communal bathroom and one cooking facility for like 120 families, they're teaching it. And so when we think that we're superior by chasing the things that don't exist that are marketed to us, we're wrong.
Yep.
And safety only exists with the support of your community.
That's a wonderful answer, Mark. Thank you for that. And thank you for this conversation. I've had a really great time talking with you, and best of luck on your new show.
I appreciate that. And yeah, it's a lot of exactly this. So thank you for having me. It's been, you know, an honor to share space, and I hope whoever is listening that this has been helpful for you. And yeah, thank you for showing up.
Thank you for listening. This is the Second Transition Podcast, and today we heard from Mark Brand. You can find out more about Brand and his work and his new radio show, which is absolutely fantastic, in the episode notes. This episode of the Second Transition Podcast was produced from the traditional lands and territories of the Washoe people in what is now known as Northeastern California. The Second Transition Podcast is supported in part by the Arrow Food Institute at the University of Guelph and in part by VoiceEd Radio. Be well and see you next time.